Good morning, everybody. Boker Tov. Thank you all for coming. It's lovely to see people here this morning. I'd like to read off a couple of dedications, if you don't mind if I read them from my phone. The Wednesday morning Bet Midrash here in Rechavia is dedicated through the academic year. Le'ilin Nishmois Daniel ben David and Limud bat Avram Strauss. And Mordechai ben Moshe and Reisel bat Yosef Meir Marcus, Zichron and Nivracha, who are the parents of Judy and Menachem Marcus. The shir, my specific shir, is sponsored for this academic year. Le'ilui Nishmas Brana bas Brandit and Zelig ben Kalman, Aleim Hashalom. And we have a very specific dedication for this morning, that the shir is dedicated in loving memory of Cookie's brother, Alan Be'er, Hashem Yikom Demo, who is Avram Chaim ben Yaakov Shmuel Zanvil Hashem Yikom Demo. And that dedication is by Cookie and Howie Marzel. And we're going to learn some Torah, have a very exciting shir, Be'ezrat Hashem Le'ilu Nishmatam. And I think we're going to have a little bit of a roller coaster today. It's a fascinating topic. It's one that we have not looked at for at least 8 years. And there's more in today than we've done in the past. If you remember last week, we talked about a topic. I like the topics which are on the line between halakha and hashkafa. That's the line that we're treading throughout these shiur, and that's what we've been doing really for the last 10 years, sometimes more halakha, sometimes more hashkafa. Last week we looked at the issue of v'asita hayashar v'hatoiv. What is the right thing to do? How do we know what is the right thing to do? Even when we can't look it up, that's not just a detailed halakha, that is a general meta halachic principle. Today we're going to look at another one, which we could really do in two shiurim, but I've decided to do it in one, so that we'll do something else next week, which is the issue of kavod habriyot. Giving honor, dignity to other people. And maybe just start with that word, briot. What does that word sort of signify to us? It's an unusual word. It doesn't say kavod bnei adam or kavod ha'enosh. It says kavod ha'briot. So I think he does two things. There's a very interesting lecture by Professor Gerald Blitzstein, and he talks about this maybe 20 years ago. The kavod in the ancient world was limited to the king, to the nobles, to the aristocracy. Even today, there's a hierarchy in many societies. In America, it's not by how you were born, but it's how much money you earn and how famous you are, etc. And the Torah is trying to tell us, no, all people are created with Selim Elokim, and therefore all people have kavod. It's by virtue of them just being briot. It doesn't matter how high in the pecking order they are, which is a radical concept in the ancient world and even radical today. And it also implies, as I've just mentioned, that the thing that gives them that special kavod is the Tselem Elokim. Because briot might sound like it includes cats and dogs. They're also briot. Everything's created. So, you know, trees. Give kavod to the trees. There's no halacha of giving kavod to the trees. It's only people because people are made by Tselem Elokim. And therefore, it implies both of these aspects, both the created in the image of God element and also the equality element. I think that's a very important point that we maybe just have to start with. Let's have a look at source number one. The Gemara launches into this in a very technical way. And I think this is an important point as well. Kavod abriyot, godl kavod abriyot. How important is human dignity is a general ethical principle in Judaism. The question is, how can it be applied in a very specific way? As is always the Talmud's approach, it doesn't want to deal with general, sort of ephemeral and vague principles, ethical ideas. It wants to pin it right down. It says, how far does this go? So it gives a very radical case. Number one, Hamotzi Kilayim Bevigdoi. Somebody is walking down the street and they realize that they're wearing shatness. How would they realize that? Not every case in the Gemara is as likely to happen as every other case. But let's say the person walks down the street wearing a certain coat and someone comes up to them and says, oh, that's a beautiful coat. I bought that coat a few weeks ago in America. I had it tested and it was completely full of shatness. I was told never to wear it. And you realize suddenly that you're wearing this piece of clothing full of shatness. Push that. You have to take it off straight away. I feel it was shook. Even if you're in a public environment. Now, okay, my case of the coat, okay, it's not the end of the world. You'll get a bit cold and you might get wet.
But here we're dealing with a situation where maybe that's all they're wearing. They just used to wear very simple clothes, something with Arabic canvas, like a poncho or whatever, tied up with a belt. And somebody says, "You're wearing shatnas, so rip it off in the street," even if they're wearing nothing underneath. My timer. What is the reason for that extreme halacha? And it brings a posuk in Mishlei, which is a very important posuk for our shir. Ein chochma, the ein tzmuna, the ein eitzah neged Hashem. There is no wisdom or rationalizing or trying to work out what God would want. Oh, God will understand if I wear shatnas because He wouldn't want me to be embarrassed. There's no rationalizing. Kol makom sheyesh chilul Hashem. Whenever there's a chilul Hashem here in the broad sense being a breach of a Torah mitzvah, ein chokim kavod the rav. You don't give kavod to anybody. There is no, even a rav, even a great person, there is no greater kavod, the Gemara seems to be saying, than keeping the mitzvahs of Hashem. And that defines what is mechubad and what isn't mechubad, and you can't start generalizing or rationalizing in other areas. The Gemara now challenges that and says, yes, but that's not so straightforward. There are situations in which we do override mitzvot. We'll see what that means, mitzvot. Because kvod habriyot, and by the way, you remember the other phrase in Pirkei Avot, ezehu mechubad, ha-mechabed et habriyot, again, that phrase comes up. The kvod habriyot actually is a trump card. I don't know if I can say that word anymore. It used to be very neutral. A trump card that overrides halacha. That you don't say, well, the halacha is clearly the most objectively respectable way to behave. No, there are situations where it is not. So let's have a look at this. Second paragraph. Tashma. So the Gemara challenges this principle, which, by the way, is also upheld by the story of David and Michal. Remember the story of David and Michal at the end of in Shmuel Aleph there at the end, where he says that he's dancing up with the Aron Kodesh, and she says to him, "How is that the way that the king behaves?" And he just says, "Lifnei Hashem, I only behave the way that I'm meant to behave. Lifnei Hashem, I don't care about what the people think. I don't care about what the maidservants think. I'm doing the right thing, and that's the right thing to do." Okay, fine. That seems to support that. But the Gemara challenges. Tashma. God and Kavod Abrius. How important is respect, dignity of human beings? Because it pushes aside a Torah prohibition. Wow, that sounds very broad. V'amai, why does it do that? Leima, why don't we say, you can't rationalize away mitzvot, even if you're embarrassed. No, the Gemara explains. Tirgumo Rav Bar Shiva Kamei the Rav Kahana. So Rav Bar Shiva says, no. It's not any mitzvah in the Torah. It's a very specific mitzvah that is overridden. Belav the loitasur. It is the negative prohibition not to deviate from the laws of the rabbis. Kol mili durabonon, all rabbinic law, says, asvechinu alav the loitasur. Is founded on, literally leaning against, the mitzvah of Lotasor, umishum kvodo, because of the honor of the person, sharu rabbanon. The rabbi said, it's okay, we won't impose that rabbinic law. So the first thing that Gemara says is, it's not any old Torah mitzvah that is overridden by kavod habriyot. It's only one. We'll see another view on this in a minute, which is the mitzvah to follow the rabbinic law. So when there's a mitzvah durabbanon, then you override the mitzvah and you say, no, I'm not going to take off my clothing in the street. If it's Shatner's Durabon, you have to know your stuff here. We're going to see, you have to know what is Shatner's Doraisa, Shatner's Durabonon. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But that's it limits it, but there still is an override function, but it's an override function for mitzvah's Durabon. We'll see later if we have the time. Rashi understands that built into the rabbinic law is a mechila by the rabbis, that we won't impose this. We will let you do what you need to do if the law is going to offend your, or not the law, if the law is going to lead to a situation where your dignity is disturbed. Still warm? You can open the windows more if you like. Comes the point where we turn the air on, I suppose, but that's way beyond my pay grade. Okay, fine. Next paragraph. So that's one exception, rabbinic mitzvah. Tashma, so how we hear it, we have another. Beit alam tamehem. There is a mitzvah in Hashavas Aveda, which says, of course, you can't ignore the lost property, just walk on by. But it sounds like Beit alam tamehem, it seems to be saying, you should ignore it. How can you ignore it? The whole point is not to ignore it. Says the Gemara, Pamim Shata Mitalem Mehem. Sometimes you have to ignore the lost property. Upamim Shata Mitalem Mehem. Sometimes you mustn't ignore it. Okay, so how does that work? Im Haya Kohen Vehi Bebeta Kvarot. Let's say you're a Kohen and somebody's lost animal, let's say, you see a little shepsel there and it's in the middle of a cemetery. And you say, oh, Yvette, that's my neighbor's sheep, he's been looking for it all day. You don't go into the cemetery in order to get the sheep. You don't have to do that. Or Shehaita Malachta in Maruba Michel Kabero. Oh sorry, I missed the line. Or Shehaya Zakein, the Ainafik Vodon. Or let's say you're an elderly person and it's beneath your personal dignity to go and crawl and you see someone's wallet lying under a truck. So you've got to crawl on the road under the truck with the oil dripping down and say, oh, you're a respected elderly person in the community. You don't have to do that. You can just walk on by. Or it's going to actually cost you more money to get the property back to them than is the value of the property itself. These are all exemptions. And that's why it says you can ignore it. It says they don't know. Am I? Why? You can't rationalize away, oh, you're elderly, you think you're exempt from mitzvahs. You're a big Talmid Chacham, you think you don't have to do mitzvahs? Why all of a sudden you don't have to do it? Says the Gemara, Isura mi mamona lo yafin. No. This is mamon. This is a monetary law. And we don't learn ritual laws from monetary laws. It could be that in a monetary law there are certain situations where we say, Hefka, Bekdin, Hefka. The Bekdin decides who has to give which money to whom. It may be that people are mindful of their money in a case where they don't expect an elderly person to scramble underneath the truck and get their property. They don't expect a Kohen to go into a cemetery to get it. So that's also an exception. And the final exception, which we're going to come back to more, which is very interesting, in the last paragraph, Tashma says the Gemara, here's another exception. La'achotah, for his sister. What's for his sister? This is last week's Pasha, a Nazir. A Nazir is like a Kohen Gadol, or a Nazira. If a woman says, how am I going to be like a Kohen Gadol? The answer is, could become a Nazira. I don't suggest it, because it's easy to get in and it's very difficult to get out. Because the only way you can get out of Nazirut is by bringing all your korbanos, and today you might have a bit of a wait to do that. You could go to a Talmid Chacham and ask for Hataras Nedarim and say, I made a terrible error. But the Nazir or the Nazira is not allowed to become Tamei Lamed, even for their own family. A regular Kohen is obligated for his mother, father, brother, blah, 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 but a Nazir, like a Kohen Gadol, is not allowed. Even for his sister, Matal Madloima, what is the Torah? He keeps adding on these other things that you don't become Tamei for. Hare, he gives an example. Here's an example, extreme. Shehaya Holech Lishchotek Pischa. This man, this Nazir, is going along the road to Shecht his Korban Pesach. Ulamolet Banot, and to do Bris Mila. He's got two of the most major positive mitzvahs in the Torah that are incumbent upon him. He has to bring Korban Pesach, it's 14th of Nisan, and he has to perform Bris Mila on his son. The two positive commands for which a person is chayv karet, if they don't do them, they're unique. Ushama shenek lomek, and he hears that there is someone's died that they have to bury. Yachol, you might have thought k'shem she'enu matam elahem. Of course, this nazi doesn't have to deal with that mate. Kach enu matam elameis mitzvah. Maybe even a meis mitzvah, somebody with nobody left to bury them to be at the levaya. Talmud Lama says, no, lachato, it's only his sister. Lachato, hu de'enu matame. For his sister, he doesn't become tame. Aval matame hu le'meis mitzvah. But even a Nazir, even on the way to Shecht his Korban Pesach, and on the way to do Bris Mila, he has to stop all of those, and he has to go bury his dead body, because they override this his other mitzvah. Am I? Why? Why can he rationalize that away? He's about to do two critical Torah mitzvahs, and he says, no, I have to bury this body. Shev va'altase shani. And the Gemara gives an interesting answer. He says, this is just a passive breach. Shev va'altase. We're not asking you to actively breach a Torah prohibition. Just don't do the Bris Mila. Don't do the Korban Pesach. And that we'll allow because of Kavod Abriah. We see this in other areas where the rabbis override certain passive passive breaches of positive mitzvot. Don't blow a shofar on Shabbat. Even though the Torah says blow a shofar on Rosh Hashanah. No, if it's Shabbat, we're going to tell you not to. How can you override a Torah law? Sheva al Taseh. Don't shake a lulav on Shabbat. We see that. Now, what you're probably about to ask me argue, maybe, is that the Nazir is not just breaking a positive mitzvah, he's also breaking a negative mitzvah. Were you going to ask that?
No, okay, fine.
Okay, fine. What were you going to ask? Yes. That's a perfect example. Kavod HaMeis is Kavod HaBrios. And by the way, here you see that it's not about the person who will be offended. The mace is not going to be offended at all. It's an objective thing. This person was made B'Tselem Elokim. It is an objective prohibition of Kavod HaBrios to leave this body unburied. That's actually a very important point. So it's not just about how you feel, that a more objective criteria, which we'll see soon. I thought you were going to ask, well, one second, it's all very well with the positive mitzvah, but you're also telling this Nazir to become Tameh. That's a breach, an active breach of a negative Torah mitzvah. How can you justify that? That's not something. So Tosfos in number 2 deal with that. I'm not going to spend too much time on it. He says, well, Nazir is not exactly the same as every other Torah mitzvah, Torah prohibition, because you can always get out of it by doing Hataras Nadarim, like I say. You can't get out of eating treif by Hataras Nadarim. But Nazir is like a weaker mitzvah. Similarly, Kohuni, even if you're a Kohen, Kohen Gadol, it's a mitzvah that applies to a certain group and not to all people. And therefore, these are maybe exceptions to that rule. Although it's a good question. The question in some ways is better than the answer. Yes? Okay, so do the Brit Milah tomorrow. But you can't bury the Nase tomorrow. The Nase has to be buried right now. Okay, so you missed the Shabbat, you missed the Yom HaShemini. So in the end, sometimes you miss. If the baby's yellow, you also miss.
People leave a dead body.
Well, that's a problem, because there's a terrible prohibition to leave a dead body over night. I can't resist telling you a story, even though I don't have time for the story, that I was once called by a friend of mine to say that her grandmother sadly passed away, and she was worried there weren't going to be 10 people at the Levaya. This was a long, long time ago. It was inconvenient. It was Sunday afternoon. I was with other people. Da, da, da. She said, please, could you get a few people and come to my grandmother's Levaya? So anyway, I called a few people. We went to the Levaya. But we've got to do a mitzvah, you know. It's whatever. It's a mitzvah. We got there. There were like 100 people there. It was and we thought. I said to my friend, I said, you know, okay, it's lovely that we're here. We drove like an hour, and it's like they didn't need us by a mile. So anyway, we thought, okay, you know, whatever. As we were walking back to the car, this guy came running towards us, shaking, you know, with his hands in the air. Can we have you, please? Can we have you over here? So I said, what's going on? He goes, this person has died, and he has nobody to bury him. No one at all. He has no family. He has no friends. And he said, and I said, who are you? He goes, I'm his lawyer. Definitely not your friend. So I said, okay, you know something? This is almost like a mace mitzvah. Like, there's no one to be at this man's levaya, no one in his whole life. And we went to the levaya, we stood there, we thought we did a mitzvah. Then the lawyer said, I'd like to read you a letter from my deceased client. And I turned around to my friend and said, this is the moment. He's a billionaire. He's left all his money to the 10 men that came to his divine. I said, this must be the moment. Anyway, it wasn't that. Didn't happen. He said, I appreciate it. Thank you for coming. It was a very sad occasion in many ways. But, you know, we got a mitzvah, certainly out of it, like a mace mitzvah situation. The Talmud Yerushalmi, number 3, goes further. And he says, no, I'll tell you why you can break a negative mitzvah. Because every now and then, and Bavli doesn't rule this way, and the later halacha doesn't rule this way, there's an exceptional situation where you can even override a regular Torah mitzvah. Number 3, hafilu b'tumah, even the prohibition of tumah, like the Nazir or the Kohen Gadol, shehu midvar Torah, which is a dvar Torah, this is not the Rabbanon, Minmada Amar Rebbe Zeira, because there's a statement. Rebbe Zeira says the Yerushalmi, God will cover the greatest shadoch and the mitzvah, but lo ta'aseh shachas. You can even override a negative, full-blown negative Torah mitzvah, not the Rabbanon mitzvahs, but just on a very temporary basis, not on a permanent basis. Now, as I said, we don't really paskin like that. Although some of the later poskim tried to find maybe this is a justification of an interesting halacha in the Rambam, that if a person is having a shave. Having their beard shaved off, let's say, and they hear someone runs in, God forbid, and says that you've just lost a relative and you're not allowed to shave. If he's already got half his beard shaved off, he can have the other half of the beard shaved off. Even though that might be a problem, you know, you're not allowed to do this, that, and the other. covered up rears. You can't have a guy walking around with half a beard and feet front and out. That is objectively an extremely embarrassing situation to be in. So maybe that justifies that. But generally speaking, we do not pass it like that in Rishami. Look in the Shulchan Aruch number 4. Heroi kivai shel tarin al chaveri. If you see Shatner's deraisa on your friend, afilo haya mahalach b'shuk, even if they're walking in the street, in the public, haya kofek, so you jump on them. The Kairam Alav, you pull it off them, miyad, immediately, afilu hayo rabo, even if it's your rab. Now this, of course, is a little different to what we saw in the Gemara. In the Gemara, we said you have to take your own clothes off. Here, you have to jump on the guy, or the lady for that matter, and schlep clothes off. So, first of all, you have to know what Shatner's Doraisa. I'm not giving you a shir on Shatner's, but when things are all woven together, there's more chance of the Doraisa. When they're separate layers which are maybe kind of connected less permanently or clipped together or just laying on top of each other, there may be situations, this is Darabonon. Again, this is not a shir on Shatner's Doraisa and Darabonon, but you see a very very extreme law. The im haya shel divrehem, but if it's Shatner's Darabonon, ein karamala, then you do not do anything. The ein poshta bashuk, they do not take it off in public. So they can wear it, even though they're doing it Issa Drabanan, they can wear it all the way home. Why? Because God will cover the Brias. Cover the Brias overrides the Drabon. The Im Hayel Shel Torah, but if it's a Torah Shanas, Posh Demiya, they have to take it out. There's the error on, but okay, we'll see. Okay, fine. So you can't do a Doraisa, but you can do a Drabonon. And we'll have to see how that works, where that applies. The Shulchan Aruch gives another application of this in number 5. The im noida loy b'shabbos. This is tzitzis. If you find out on Shabbat, k'shehu b'karmelis, and you're in an area where there's a rabbinic prohibition to carry, what do you find out? Shehatalit she'alav pasul. You look down at your tzitzis or your talis garden, whatever, a man's tzitzis, and he says, oi, it's ripped off. One of my tzitzis is ripped off. Now, at that point, what's going on? Not only are they not keeping the mitzvah of wearing four tzitzis on the bayed, but they're carrying on Shabbos. Because the only heter for having your tzitzis hanging on, you can't tie other things to your, if there's no eruv, obviously. You can't tie bits and pieces to your coat and have them hanging on strings and walking around the streets. That's called carrying. So how can you carry tzitzit? The answer is you're not carrying them. They're an intrinsic part of the bayed and the mitzvah. But once one of them is gone or has become invalid, the other three are doing nothing. The other three are just, spare tzitzit that you're carrying around in case you ever need them. So it's carrying, but it's carrying drabon. If it's drabon, lo yisirenu, you don't take your talis off, me'alav, ad she'gila beso, until you get to your home, the godel covered habrias. Okay, beautiful, covered habrias, that allows you to do the issa drabonon of carrying in a rabbinically prohibited area. And then the remark comes in and says, well, why is this on Shabbos? What's the difference on Shabbos? Well, because people wear their talis home on Shabbos. Some people might wear it on Wednesday. So it says the Ramah, Dafke b'Shabbos, da'asal aso tzitziot, because you're not allowed to make tzitzit on Shabbat. And therefore what? Aval b'chol k'hagavna asur. This is very interesting, because on a weekday, you could remake your tzitzit, if you know what you're doing. On a Shabbat, you can't make tzitzit. It's prohibited on Shabbat. And therefore what? Therefore, when you're wearing a four-cornered garment on Shabbat without tzitzit, it's a lower level, it's a rabbinic prohibition. Because what are you meant to do? You can't tie the tzitzit, you can't do the mitzvah on Shabbat. The rabbi said, okay, you know something, it's still not right to wear something, a four-cornered garment without tzitzit on it, even if it's Shabbat, even if you can't do the mitzvah, but it's downgraded to a drabon. And the Ramah jumps in and is here, that's when you're allowed to do this. Now, this is a question. Because we just learned at the beginning of the shir that not only rabbinic laws, but passive breach of positive mitzvot, you're also allowed to break for kavod habriyot. So why can't you, Taka, on a weekday, walk around with a four-cornered garment without proper tzitzit on it, and say, well, you know, kavod habriyot, this overrides the passive breach even of the Torah mitzvah. And this is where the Mishnah Berurah jumps in and gives us some information which I think is going to be very, very important. Says the Mishnah Berurah, Dafka b'Shabbos, this is only on Shabbos, number 6. Perish l'fisha b'Shabbos leisa rak issa d'rabbanan. Because on Shabbos there's only an issa d'rabbanan to wear a four-cornered garment without tzitzit, because what can you do? Aval b'chal shehu oiva al issa Torah b'chal shah. When you're walking around on a weekday, there's a mitzvah, the kum, ba'aseh, bo tzitzit, that go and put tzitzit on it. The issa Torah, filo rak issa, the sheva al tasek is there, shehumonei adatzmo, mitzvah, ein nidchemit nekol kolodabrius. And he turns around and says, you can't set aside a positive Torah mitzvah even for kolodabrius. Well, the Gemara said I could. So why can't I? And here's the answer. Im loy b'genai gadol. And now we seem to be in a new world of, well, how embarrassing is it really? Is it a big embarrassment? Like somebody walking around in public with no clothes on, like the Shabbos, that's a big embarrassment. But somebody walking, so you pull your talus off, you pull your tzitzit, that's not such a big deal. For something which is not such a big deal, but it's a little embarrassing, we're not going to allow you all the heterim. We're only going to allow you to transgress a rabbinic prohibition, not a Torah prohibition, even on a passive basis. And therefore, if you get to shul on Shabbos or any day for that matter, and you pull out your talit gadol, and you realize that your tzitzits are all, you know, broken, then you don't wear it. You're not allowed to wear it. The leisha believes talit because to live, to sit without a talis, svira l'ramad who rag b'chlag in aikon. That's not such a big deal. So a guy, a married man, for one Shabbos morning, he's going to sit there in shul without a talis on. Or one weekday, they're going to say, why aren't you talis? The tzitzits have come off. Like, how embarrassing is that really? Just one second. Amnon, in the Beis HaKnesses, neither like that. If in the shul when he's wearing his talis, achas shehu kvar lavush bar talis, he's already wearing the talis, she'ach mitzitzis psulim, and then suddenly he sees one of the tzitzits has come off. Okay? Harbim in achronim mekimim, many of the achronim are more lenient. The ain't sarak l'poshta, there you don't have to take it, I'll take it, because it's more embarrassing. The sphere lahu, the kimah shehu barabim, you're in public in the shul, ha'pshitahu ganai b'yosef. And here we're playing almost in psychology. You know, what's more embarrassing? So he says, the poskim think that to walk into shul with no talis on is less embarrassing than to be sitting there and they're in the shul, suddenly take your talis off. Everyone's going to turn around, what's going on? Why did you take your talis off? And then he says, but other achronim say, no, that's not more embarrassing. It's the same. You still can't do that. Or you have to take it off wrong. So how much is this an objective or a subjective issue? We're going to see this is very important. Did Chazal give us very specific cases? This is embarrassing, this is not embarrassing. What if you happen to be very sensitive and you're highly strong or whatever, and you're going to find it very embarrassing? Is that relevant or not? So we're going to be balancing this on some things have to fit into boxes. But other things, it's going to depend very much on how embarrassed you are. I'm going to have to just go on a little bit because they can see already I'm going to run out of time and I don't want to go over to next week unless I have to. So we'll see soon where those limits of objective and subjective embarrassment are. Does this apply to Jews and non-Jews? Non-Jews are also briot, also made with tzelem elokim. But very often our mitzvahs are not the same klape Jews and non-Jews. Look at the Rambam. Talks about a judge. Kol elu advarim, how important it is for a judge to be focused on the dignity of the criminal, or the potential criminal, the person on trial. The fimashi yir hadayim, he could only go with what they can see. Whatever the times require, whatever it needs, you have to use your judgment, literally. The dying has to always be very l'shem shemayim. The aliyah covered habrius kal be'enav. Don't let the judge be too quick to override people's personal dignity. Because it overrides even a rabbinic mitzvah, says the Rambam. The kol shekain, even more so, kvod bnei Abraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov, hamakzikim b'toras ha'emes. Even more so if they're Jewish and they're part of the same Torah as the Dayan, but clearly the Rambam is saying if they're not Jewish, the mitzvah still applies. Why? Pretty obvious number eight. Rabbi Akiva would say, chaviv adam shenivra b'tselem. Mankind is made b'tselem elokim. And this applies to Bnei Noach, not just Bnei Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And this is somewhat of a debate as to whether this does apply in the same way or not the same way. There's an interesting application in the Israeli court system. Menachem Elon, the judge, applied this idea that the dayan has to be very careful when working out how many rights does the criminal or the prisoner, let's say, have. Let's say they think the prisoner is smuggling drugs into the prison. Are they allowed to force him to have an intimate body search to see whether there are drugs there? Or is this balanced on covered abrius? You know, we only suspect that there might be drugs, and we don't know. Do we subject this person to such a degrading procedure or not? And again, we're not talking there about terrorists. We're talking about a regular criminal. How that works is a good question, and he weighs that all up.
Now they have scanners.
Okay, now they have scanners. Baruch Hashem. Okay, fine. What is included in covered abrius? What kind of issues come up? So we've seen clothing. People being unclothed, being naked, busha, which is a real objective embarrassment. Think of Adam and Chava in Gan Eden. At the beginning, the Loyit Bashashu, they were oblivious to that, but suddenly when they became aware, they became embarrassed because they had no clothes. The clothes of the, it's often clothing related, the clothes of the Kohen Gadol are called Lechavod or Letifaret. Kavod is the clothing. The din of Kavod Shabbat is one of the applications of Kavod Shabbos, is the kind of clothing that a person wears. It's also being applied in the Gemara to people who are in very sensitive situations because they're mourning others. For example, the halacha is brought that if there are people accompanying a mourner, and the people are all kohanim, let's say, and the mourner goes to a place where there's a tumah, then if it's only tumah derabanan, then the people, the Kohanim who are walking with him, shouldn't run away. Because it's just embarrassing. The poor guy's walking. He's just buried a relative. He's walking home. And they run away from him. Rather, they should break the mitzvah. Tumah derabanan. We'll see another case of that. Rather than do this. Burial, we've seen situations of the mace mitzvah. And personal hygiene. We'll see some interesting practical cases where people are left without the ability to be clean. They smell bad, if they're self-conscious about that. These are objective cases of covered abrius. But can we go beyond this? And we'll see in a minute some very controversial attempts to apply this beyond this. Usually in halacha, covered abrius is used as another grounds to be lenient when there are already separate grounds to be lenient. It's what's called a snit lahatir. Often it's used in situations where the prohibition is merely a chumrah, but not always. And often it's used, it's limited to cases where the person's not responsible. If you caused your own problem with knowledge, then we're not going to necessarily bend the halacha in order to deal with that. But there's more to be said on that. But the poskim are restricted in the way they apply this. And there are different degrees of gnai. Have a look here in number 9. So this is a case where a senior dayan is called to give evidence in a very small case, which they think is like beneath their dignity. Like, I'm the head of the Beis Din, and they've called me to come schlep to give evidence in this minor matter. It's beneath my dignity. Tosfos brings up, no, that's not called a Gnai Gadol. The Hasam Gnai Gadol, who lemeis mitzvah. With a meis mitzvah, that's a really objective, embarrassing situation. She'ein lo kaivrin, there's no one to bury them. Lekach sheva al tasi shari. Therefore, a person can put aside maybe even a Torah mitzvah on a passive breach. To pull off your clothes in the street. Gnai gadol, gnai meis, that's a gnai meis mitzvah, that's really embarrassing. Aval hacha, here in the case of the dayan giving testimony, Gabi Eidus, leke gnai kol kach. It's not so embarrassing. I mean, you're sensitive? Okay, that's your problem. This is not objectively so embarrassing. The Lo Shari Be'isura Afilu Shevatar, I'm not going to let you override any prohibitions. I'll give you an interesting example which comes up. Let's say there's a couple, and the woman is in nida, and she's not allowed to hand anything to her husband, and he's not allowed to hand anything to her. And she turns around and says, this is embarrassing. You know, we're out in public for a meal, or Shabbos meal, or whatever, and every time my husband gives it, he puts it on the table, I pick it up, and everyone's looking at me, what's wrong with you, etc. So she says, and I'm embarrassed. I don't want people to know that I'm in nida. It's not appropriate for them to know that. And then Rav Moshe Feinstein raises this shayla, and he says, I don't understand, like, why is that embarrassing? Everybody knows that you're a healthy young woman, and that's like the way that, you know, this is just not just you, it's general that everybody has this situation, and if they don't, then that's a problem. So why are you embarrassed? That's a good question, but the maestro, she's embarrassed. Does she have any heterim on the drabonos of handing things to her husband because she's especially sensitive to this? Or do we tell her, look, you know something? This is the way that life is, and we're all in the same boat. And so I heard Rav Willig talking about this recently at a conference, and he said, we're not so quick to give heterim to people to just break harachotis, things that are important to keep between them because they're specifically sensitive. He gives one exception, though. He says, when he sees people passing babies, with a shinery of some kind, and they put the baby on the ground. I mean, you see, Vishakasa, people put the baby on the ground, and the husband picks it up. He said he saw someone put the baby on the bonnet of a car. You know, he says there you absolutely can pass the baby, not because you're embarrassed to pass things, but because the baby is a chayla. Every baby has a dinner of a chayla. You're going to put a baby on the ground in the street and pick it up again? So it's not a heter because you're embarrassed. It's a heter because this is the way you do the chayla. A chayla allows you to override certain dramas. Okay, so the baby, he's definitely menkalon. But this issue that you're particularly concerned, that's maybe just you. Look in number 10, Mishnah Brura brings this up again in the case of the tzitzis and what's called a minor ganai, and then he says at the end of the second line, the ayba achronim sheiskimu da hakol talui beratzon haish halovesh. It really does depend to some degree on how embarrassing this poor fellow will feel it to be if he was sitting in shul without a talis. So he then opens the door to a more subjective approach. Some guys might not care. For other people, it might be extremely difficult. There's a case in the Rivash in the 14th century. A couple asked him a shaila. They had a newborn boy. They were making a bris milah and chol hamoed. And they wanted to sew some beautiful new clothes for the little baby because all they had was the hand-me-downs or whatever they had from older kids, and they were all falling apart. And they said it would be much nicer to have some nice new clothes. And he said, no, he says, there's no heter to override. Even though this is the Rabbanon on Chol HaMoed, you can't sew on Chol HaMoed for that. He says, it's fine, the baby will be fine. No, you know, it's not, no one's judging. You know, don't be so sensitive. He doesn't say don't be so sensitive, but he says this is not an objectively permitted case. So it's an interesting question as to how we balance that. Let's look at something else. We saw with the case of the person walking down the street, do I have to jump on them and tear the clothing off them? So look at this, number 11. Haroi kilan shel Torah al chaveiro afilu haya mahalach pashuk. We saw this before. You jump on them, pull it off. Miyad immediately afilu haya rabbi. Says the Ramon. V'yeshon the im haya haloivish shogeg. What if the person was completely inadvertent? They never realized this was shakas. They're not just breaking the halach on purpose. Okay? It's the shogeg. Eitzar chloima b'shuk. You don't have to do it in the marketplace. D'mishum kavod abrius yishtok. Because what's the issue here? Who has the shaila? You have the shaila of tochacha. Do you have to intervene? They're oblivious. They're walking down, they're completely unaware that it's shatners, they didn't do anything on purpose, and you know, can you keep shtum? When do you have to intervene? So he says, you can keep quiet, but Ali Afishena is shogeg. Why? Because I don't have an obligation to do tochacha when the person is doing it b'shogeg, or even if I do have an obligation, I can break that obligation in a passive way. That's a good example of a sheva al taseh. I don't actively breach the Torah, I passively breach whatever mitzvah of tochacha I have, and therefore I'm allowed to let them walk around in the street. That's actually very interesting, because then the focus is on the person who wants to intervene, not on the person who's wearing the shalit. It says that gives you a heter. You can keep quiet. And a similar shaila arises in number 12 in Hilchas Avelas, where a Kohen is asleep in a house, and the people who are awake realizes that there's a dead body in the building. Somebody died in the building. And now the Kohen has to get out of there. By the way, every Kohen has to have an escape plan as to where they're going to go. When they move into a house, they have to look, how is it configured? If something like this happens, do I go on the balcony? Do I go in the stairwell? Do I run to the roof? Do I run downstairs? Because the laws of Tumah are very complicated, and they have to work it all out. But now, he's asleep. My Shaila is, do I run into the bedroom and say, get out of the house? You know, there's Tumah in the house, in which case, let's say they sleep with no pajamas on, they've got no clothes on. Do they just rush out of the house with no clothes on, or can they stop and put their pajamas on? Or put something on, throw something on. That's an interesting shayla, very practical shayla. Look at number 12. Says the Ramon, Kohen Shoshoket Arum. A Kohen that sleeps with no pajamas on. There's no halacha, you have to wear pajamas. He sleeps very tzanur with a sheet on top of him. V'hu ba'ayel in mace, and he ends up under the same roof as a dead body. V'lo yada, and he never realized. En hagidloy, don't tell him. Because again, your mitzvah is to give tochacha. How can you be asleep in a place with tumah and you're allowed to breach that passively? Ala yikros stam. Just wake them up, stam. Shiyasa kadesh shiyabish asmo tchila. Just go in and say you should get up and get dressed because we've got something to talk about. And they're clueless, and they get up and they get dressed, and as soon as they're dressed, you shout, there's a mace in the building. But once she told the guy, then it's too late. Also, the hands in actually have to be shut. He can't get dressed. He's sitting in a house with tumah in it. That's an issa d'oraisa. V'dafki im hu ba'oyehel hameshe hu tumah d'oraisa. But that's only if it's tumah d'oraisa. About im hu ba'ayin beisa pras. Let's say that in a tumah d'rabbanon, he gives examples. A beis hapras is a field that used to have a grain in it, and it's been all ploughed over, and there may be little remnants left of the body, but they don't know. There's a din d'rabbanon that a kohen can't go there. Okay, so if you're already doing a d'rabbanon, so then you don't have to run out naked. I don't know why he's sleeping in a beis hapras, but he is. Or eretz ha'amim, or what about chutz la'aretz? How is a Kohen suddenly going to wake up and find that he's in Chutz La'aretz? What's the deal with Chutz La'aretz? Chutz La'aretz has a din of Tumah D'rabbanon. Now, Kohenim are not makpid on this today, because as you probably know, there are Kohenim living in Chutz La'aretz. But it's a shaila. It's a shaila. There's a din D'rabbanon of Tumah. So let's say this Kohen is, I don't know, asleep in a wagon. And they're, you know, going in there, and all by mistake, they've gone into Chutz La'aretz, or he didn't know. And do they have to wake? He said, okay, so then he can get dressed first. Okay, Tumah D'rabbanon Yad B'Shatz Matzchila, the Godel covered Habrias. And that's a very interesting case, but again, one which is revolves around clothing. So I brought you some practical examples down at the bottom here. Some of them these are all practical questions that come up. Tearing toilet paper on Shabbat. That's a very common one, especially if a person, like younger people who are hosted with other people, they go to the bathroom on Shabbat and they realize there's no tissues. What are they going to do? They have two choices. Either they basically shout, help, 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 I'm stuck, help, which is very embarrassing. Or they tear the regular toilet paper, but with a shinui, which is a d'rabbanon, so that would be allowed to be done. The modern day example, which is more appropriate and relevant, is the automatic toilets. You're in a place, in a hotel, whatever, and the only bathroom, you need the bathroom, the only bathroom you can use is one that with sensors, and it flushes, and this and that, and it's all, can you do? You could argue that you're not really getting any benefit from that anyway, if it's just a regular public toilet, so maybe it's a secretia. You could use that as an argument. But there again, we say cover the brias. You don't have to stand there saying, I've nowhere to go to the bathroom. You can use the bathroom. Making muksa stones on Shabbos, this is the case that it gives in the Gemara, that even those stones, regular stones in the street are muksa, in the field are muksa, a person would have, back in those days, they didn't have tissues. They had little stones they had prepared to clean themselves. A few nice, clean, smooth stones. So someone forgot to bring them with on Shabbat. They're not muksa, because they're designed and designated for a use, which is a normal use. They forgot their stones, and now they're stuck. So they can use a regular stone. To us, it seems quite strange to be able to do that. But the muksa prohibition is overridden. We talked about electronic hearing aids. And we said that this is one of the hatarim that the Tzitz Eliezer brings, that a person who is unable to hear on Shabbat, you do things with their hearing aids, move them, maybe even charge them. We talked about that because of cover the breeze. That's very interesting because cover the breeze, then that's a broader application. This is not someone who's not dressed or who needs the bathroom. This is someone who says it's embarrassing for me to not be able to hear anything on Shabbat. Before we turn over a few more of those, there's a question of tattooing. Some people who have reconstructive surgery after cancer or an accident or an operation, sometimes what the hospital wants to do is tattoo certain colouring onto the body to make it look natural. That's how they make it look natural. And the question is this allowed? Otherwise they're walking around with a very scarred, and again, no one sees this. That's them. Their family sees it. So again, one of the applications, potentially, I'm not passing any shilas, is where there's tattooing d'rabbanon, not d'oraisa. And again, you have to be in every sugya. What's a tattoo d'oraisa? What's a tattoo d'rabbanon? Maybe it will be allowed for the purposes of that reconstructive surgery. Rav Avadi Yosef has a very interesting case of a young woman who's married to a fine young man, and they're about to make a pinyan of ben. She had a baby, first little boy. Everyone's excited. The husband's over the moon. But she never told him that she had an abortion long before they met, because she had a history, and that history never came up in the shidduch inquiries, and this wasn't a pig in her bed. Does she have to tell him? He's going to go ahead and make brachas and do a mitzvah and over them. And the Rabbi Paskin, that no, there were many reasons why he said no, because of the Shalom Bais as well. But one of them was the sheer embarrassment. This woman didn't do anything wrong, meaning she's a balas tshuva. She made mistakes in the past. Okay, we all do silly things when we're young people. And she realized now she did. She was a balas tshuva. He said that she doesn't have to tell him, which is very, very interesting. Let me give you a couple others. Refuah, taking medication on Shabbos, from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, says a person with very bad halitosis, bad breath, and they're just, without taking, popping their little pills, they're just, everybody runs away from them everywhere they go. So they can take that on Shabbos. You can't take medication on Shabbos. It's not something where you're not in pain. Is it? No, it's embarrassing. You've got very bad breath, etc. One of the most interesting cases is number 13. Doing a wedding on Shabbos. So this is in the Shulchan Aruch, number 13. Ein Mekadshim, you're not allowed to do Kiddushin on Shabbos. The Yesh Matir Lekadish Hechad Ein Lo Ishul Manim, maybe the Hatarim, if the man has never done Peru Revu, you can maybe do the Kiddushin on Shabbos. The Eshet Ehu Adin HaKnisa L'Chup L'Shari, maybe you're allowed to do the Chuppah. V'Hafak Ab Deloi Kadal Anachi. We don't paskin like that. We don't do weddings on Shabbos for men who have never done the mitzvah for Peru Revu. We don't do that. Mikol Makom Soimchim Azeh, but we can bring that into the consideration. If there's a case of kavod abris, they always got married on a Friday, and let's say they got, because it was cheaper to make the suda on Friday night. They had one cow in the village, and they were going to use it for Shabbos and for the wedding. So, and this was a case that happened to him. There was a young woman, I think she was an orphan on this case, and she was getting married. And as they were going to the chuppah, everybody fell out with each other over the money. Oh, you promised this? No, we promised that. And everyone's screaming, and it's a very unhappy situation. The Ramot takes them to the side, brings them into his office, negotiates with them, gets everybody back to Shalom Bias, brings them out, and says, okay, we'll do the wedding. And someone says, oh, there's three stars, even Rabbeinu Tam, you know, it's Shabbos. You can't do a wedding on Shabbos. And he says, that's an issue of the Rabbanon. We're doing this wedding on Shabbos. Because of the Kavod Abrius, there's a young woman and a young man, who knows whether they'll even be talking to each other by Motzei Shabbos. All the food is ready and prepared. Says, so it's Kavod Abrius. We're overriding the Rabbanon. And he got himself in hot water over this. People are writing to him and saying, are we hearing that you're doing weddings on Shabbos? It's against the Gemara, it's an issue of the Rabbanon. And he had broad shoulders. And let's face it, he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, so he wrote it in. So he could turn around and say, look, it's in the Shulchan Aruch, it's Mutter. But he was very strong on that issue. Go over to page number 4, let's do a few other things. You can look at some of those other issues later. There's an example of a young man who's gone prematurely grey. Can he dye his hair black? There's an interesting shaila about a woman after she's been divorced, and she's finding it extremely embarrassing to cover her hair. Covering hair for a divorced woman is a requirement in Shulchan Aruch, but it's drabonon. And there are situations, and again, I'm not giving any general psak here at all, where there are certain situations where the woman is very traumatized, especially where it's a divorce that happened very, very early after the marriage began, and she's effectively a single girl. She's a young girl in her early 20s who had a very traumatic failed marriage. She's not an older person. And there again, kavod abrius could be a relevant angle depending on the case. People bring up the question of women and men shaking hands. Can you just shake hands with someone? Because look, it's offensive for people. They put out their hand to not give them a hand, etc. So this would work as an argument if shaking hands with a person was an issur d'rabbanon, which most poskim say it's not. Most poskim say it's either an issur d'oraisa, because there's some kind of sexual tension going on between the two of them, or if there's no sexual tension, it's completely permitted. There's nothing to do with kavod abrius. There's no problem whatsoever, because it's just a handshake. And of course, when is a handshake, and when is a handshake more than a handshake? Okay, then you have to work out whether it's a Torah prohibition or whether it's completely permitted. But if it's a Torah prohibition, then kavod abrius won't help you. And if it's totally permitted, then you don't need kavod abrius.
So it's not so straightforward that the handshake really helps, and or that the Kavod HaBrios really helps there. And then you've got the interesting case brought by Rabbi Professor Daniel Sperber that we started to talk about in our discussions about partnership minyanim. And he wants to argue that Kavod HaBrios, that it's embarrassing for women as a general group, that you're not giving them aliyahs in shul. They feel embarrassed by this, and therefore the Kavod HaBrios, which is offending the women, should override the Kavod HaTzibur, where Chazal said that you can't call women up because it's Kavod HaTzibur. And he has a very long piece on this. Needless to say, this was jumped on and rejected quite fast. And there are many reasons why this is a problem. First of all, and perhaps most fundamental, if you say that Kavod HaBrios is that the rabbis built in a mechila and said, we don't mind if you do this in this situation, then clearly they didn't do that when they said that a woman cannot be called up for a mitzvah. So it doesn't really work in that. Also, you can't just say every rabbinic mitzvah is embarrassing and therefore I'm not going to do it. What happens if I'm sitting with clients and they serve regular treif wine and I'm embarrassed not to drink the wine? Everyone's drinking the wine. I'm embarrassed. Well, I can suddenly eat food which is treif. You can do isuri derabanan just because you feel embarrassed. You can't just always extend that to every single situation. And there's also an interesting question, which is this a case of embarrassment? Is it that they're embarrassed, or is it just that they're annoyed? I mean, maybe they're justifiably annoyed. Maybe they're offended. But is that the parameter for Kavod HaBrios, that someone's upset or annoyed or offended? Maybe that's not. Maybe there has to be something more objective, someone who's got no clothes on, etc., like we saw before. That is maybe more of what's going on. So Rabbi Sperber's arguments were largely rejected. Let's just look at a couple of cases of positive Torah prohibitions overridden by Kavod HaBrios. This is, as we said, even in a very serious, very embarrassing situation. There was an interesting shaila of a man who'd had a tattoo on his left arm, on his muscle, his bicep, of a naked woman. And the Tzitz Eliezer, the Minchas Yitzchak, is dealing with the shaila now. He's about tshuva. What does he do about his tefillin? He's going to roll up his sleeve and put his tefillin on, and as he rolls up his sleeve, his youth comes to, you know, hit him in the face, and he goes through that. He doesn't actually talk about Kavod HaBrios there. He gives other answers where he says that, you know, you can cover it over, you can, I don't know, put a little bit of leather there, or you can draw in some clothes or something like that. So he gives up, but you get these situations. Rav Moshe Sternbuch has a very unusual case of a Kohen with a partially detached finger. Can't make this stuff up. And if they take off the finger, then he has a shaila of Eva Minachai. And is he allowed to be there with a detached limb from a human body, his finger? And he gives a heter there to take it off in order to put it back. They're going to sew it on again. And he uses Kavod HaBrios as one of the issues. Let's just finish with some discussion of what are the origins. And we'll get this done actually in 5 or 6 minutes. Maybe we'll be able to read all the sources. Everybody agrees Kavod HaBrios is a real thing. But where does it come from? Where in the Torah is the source for this rabbinic idea that we've seen applied in many different ways? Where do they get it from? So some understand that it's implicit, as I said, in the Tzelem Elokim. As we saw before, look at number 16, we will read this. Ben Azai Omer, Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam, Zeh Klal Gadol B'Torah, that the idea that this is the generation of man, the creation of man, is the fundamental of the Torah. Rabbi Kiva says, V'yahavtal Reka Kamocha, Zeh Klal Gadol B'Torah, that is the Klal Gadol. Shalot Omer, and he comes back and says, Telot Omer Hoyel V'Nizbaziti, Yidbazeh Chaveri, if I don't mind being embarrassed, I can do that to other people. Hoy the nitkalalti. If I'm just being cursed out, nitkalal chaveri, I can do it to other people. No, it's not a question of you. Amar Rabtam Chone, imasita kain. If you do that, dana mi atam avazeh. Who are you embarrassing when you embarrass a person? The demut elokim asa'ato. It's not that you're embarrassing a person. You might turn around and say, you know something? I don't care. I'm never embarrassed. You can take all your clothes off in public. It wouldn't bother me at all. The Gemara is saying here, no, I don't care if you're not embarrassed. You should be embarrassed. The reason that this covered abrias applies is because you're made betzelem elokim. And it's not your dignity that we care about. It's the dignity of being made, as a human being with a godly spark, etc., etc. So that is maybe the most fundamental of all sources for what covered abrias is all about. Rabbeinu Bachya wants to learn it from the mitzvah of Dalet Vehei. Remember, if a man, a person, this could be a man or a woman, steals a sheep and then sells it or shechts it, and they get found out, they have to pay back 4 times. But if they steal an ox, they have to pay back 5 times. So why is it more for an ox? You say, oh, well, an ox is bigger. No, but that's covered by the difference in value. Obviously, you know, if the ox is bigger, he pays back more. So the Gemara says that no. The guy who stole the sheep has already paid back a little bit before you even get to the court case. Because with the ox, he just clicked his fingers and the ox ran away, or he just dragged him out. With the sheep, he schlepped him on his shoulders to get the sheep out. So this guy has already been degraded that little bit. Okay, he's a ganav. You care? Yes, actually we care a little bit. He's already paid a little bit of his dues by schlepping this. And the Rebbe Bachya says that is maybe the root of covered abrias, that we have a certain rachmanas on the ganav because he's already been embarrassed in that way. Others learning from the mitzvah of tzelem of v'halachta b'drachav, what's the first act that we see that God does for the human race? Makes them clothes. They're embarrassed, they're naked, God makes them clothes. And we see that the Gemara also says, just like God is Malbish Arumim, we should also be Malbish Arumim, and we learn from there. Rav Soloveitchik wants to learn from, I didn't put it on the sheet, there's the idea that Avram Avinu was talking to God in Vayera at the beginning, and he breaks off when there are 3 people that need to be looked after. He says, you see that the covered abrias, giving cover to these 3 dusty travelers, overrides even his private moment of transcendent connection to God. Professor Blitzstein also brings an example in that lecture I mentioned. He says that the ability of the person who's scared in battle to go back home. We say you can go back home if you're scared for Milchemet Rishut. And all those other people, says the Medrash, all those other people who we allow to go back home, someone who's planted a vineyard, who's married a woman, etc., we allow them to go back home so that he doesn't feel embarrassed that he's going home. Maybe that's also a source of covered abrias, although you could argue the reason we're sending these people home is nothing to do with covered abrias. It's because we don't think they'll be effective soldiers. They'll demoralize the army. We don't need you here. Thank you very much. You'll do better for us if you go home. Could be that as well. But I wanted to finish with just this last piece on page 6, which is actually a very beautiful piece from Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, where Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, he brings the example of Moshe Rabbeinu at the snare. Moshe Rabbeinu is at the snare, at the burning bush, and God says to him, you are the Goel, you are the one who's going to go down to Egypt and bring the people out. And he argues this way, he argues that way. And his final argument, he says, is just send Aaron, you know, my brother. Send Aaron. And God says to him, you don't have to worry about Aaron. What's he worried about? He's a younger brother. Aaron HaKohen is an older brother. And he's going to get offended. Like his little brother is now the Goel. And he who's been dealing with the whole situation in Egypt for 80 years, while Moshe Rabbeinu has been off who knows where, you know, herding sheep and being the king of Cush and whichever Midrashim you want to follow. And he just breezes in now and tells his elder brother, thank you very much, I'll take it from here and we'll take the people out. Moshe says, I can't do that to my brother. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, it's fine because he doesn't mind. Samach b'liboy, he's fine, he's happy with it, says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. And if he wouldn't be happy with it, that would be a reason that Moshe didn't have to go. That would be a reason to postpone the whole Geula. Because God will cover the Abrias. Yeah, you wouldn't be able to be the Goel if your older brother was going to be offended. You're right. But he's not going to be offended, and God gets angry with him that he didn't even think he was going to be offended, because he's beyond that, he's above that. But the point is a correct point, and he says that is, if you like, the root of covered Abrias in the Torah, and that we see it so clearly. Okay, we got through those sources. We did well, Baruch Hashem. Next week we'll do something else, but this is a fascinating topic, and there's much more to be learned. All the best, and we'll see you next week, please God.